Hi, welcome back to the TT Wine Explorer podcast. I'm Tanya Tomaszewska. This episode is about my recent non-alc or low-alc journey. Yes, you heard that right. This episode is not about wine per se, but it's about other beverages, which I've been exploring when, from time to time, I swap in other drinks for a vino. Now, many of you may relate to this, as I think I'm not the only one doing this these days. There seems to have been a huge boom in the sober curious or moderating market. I see it here in British Columbia and in many places to which I travel. If you read the news or follow any social media and have any interest in beverages flagged in your channels, you'll see that almost daily there's a new product or commentary about this trend. And so for today, rather than just provide a monologue to you about my non-alc explorations, I thought I'd invite my friend Graham McLennan back onto my show to have a sidebar conversation with him about this topic. For longtime listeners, you'll know that Graham has been on my show a number of times now. We've done a few episodes about Las Vegas, and Graham also came on for episode 6 to discuss downshifting on Sardinia. And it was during that conversation that we discussed the intersection of wine and life in the world's so-called blue zones, and also what it's like to travel to those places as a wine or drinks lover when one is not drinking wine, or any alcohol for that matter. Graham produces and hosts his own podcast called Chefdemony. His episodes are really great adventures connected with the world of food, chefs, travel, and sometimes lawyers. I love the multidisciplinary aspects of Graham's show, and I highly recommend it to you. I always receive wonderful feedback from listeners after I do a sidebar chat with Graham, and it's an absolute delight to have him back on my show. I hope that you enjoy my discussion with Graham McLennan today. Let's fly. Hi, Graham. Thanks for joining me today.
Hello, Tanya. It is delightful to be back and chatting with you once again. Thanks for having me.
So as I mentioned in my opening remarks, I've been exploring various non-alcoholic and low-alcoholic products recently. Many call this the no-low space, and that space is seeing huge growth and interest in the overall beverage market these days. Now, I know that there are a lot of things driving that market and the underlying motivations there, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But for my part, my explorations are about alternating and moderation in my life. That is, although I'm looking to reduce my overall alcohol intake at certain times, I still want to experience, you know, an interesting drink. I drink a lot of herbal tea and water during the day, and often that just doesn't seem to cut it for me when I want a glass of something when I'm cooking dinner, or maybe it's an end of the day aperitif, or maybe a post-dinner libation, or maybe I'm out for lunch with friends and I've got an afternoon of work ahead of me and I just want to stay clear and sharp. So for me, moderation or reduction of alcohol is about clarity a lot of the time and just trying to keep maintaining balance in a very busy life through work, exercise, eating well, and play. Now, I know this isn't unique to me, and a lot of women in particular around my vintage feel that they need to reduce alcohol for metabolic reasons. So there's a lot going on here, and everyone will have their own reasons that they may be zebraing, for example, alternating or reducing or abstaining from alcohol. So why I lead this is because each of our journeys are different, and that's where I'm sitting. Now, when we chatted in episode 6 about Sardinia, you mentioned and shared a little bit about your non-alc foray at that time, and you were talking about what it was like to have a dry holiday adventure in one of the largest wine-producing regions in the world, and not to mention in a blue zone where there's a lot of clinking of wine glasses. So that discussion was last year. Where are you now? Are you still on a non-alc path, or what would you like to share with us today?
Sure. Well, first, I love those terms, and I hadn't heard either of them, no-lo and zebraing. I think those are fantastic. And I guess I'm still on the no of the no-lo spectrum. I'm continuing to choose to be on the zero side, so not having any alcohol at all. And it's coming up to about two years in January. And for me now, it is, I would say, unremarkable most of the time. I really don't think about it that much. Certainly being in Italy and seeing people enjoy a glass of wine with lunch, that was a time when it was remarkable to me. But that's where I'm at right now. And as I say, day-to-day life, it's become just sort of standard operating procedure. And I think the biggest change, and this will be familiar to many people, I think the biggest change in my life since Sardinia is that Bea and I welcomed a baby into our family. So, which is great in many, many ways. Rest, relaxation, and sleep are not any of those ways. And so, now it's even easier.
You've got the added fatigue component.
Exactly. And what I'm finding now is that my sleep schedule is totally my son's sleep schedule. Not totally. I don't nap quite as often as he does during the day. But at night, you know, we wrestle him into bed. Sometimes it's 7:45 and he falls asleep and he's in his bassinet. And I am diving into bed because I know I can get a few hours of sleep. It doesn't matter how early it is.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a function of getting older, but I was finding that really any amount of alcohol was not good for my sleep at all.
Right. So yeah. And that's a common thing I'm hearing as well. That could be an age and stage thing for many of us, which is how alcohol affects sleep, or levels of alcohol, I should say. So having said that, if you have the opportunity to keep your eyes open and you're wanting to kick back or have a quick refreshment in between things, you know, what sorts of non-alcoholic libations have you been exploring and enjoying? You know, can you share a few examples of some brands or styles, or, you know, where you're getting them from, if you're making them yourself?
Absolutely. The first one that comes to mind actually is a local one from Strange Fellows Brewing, and they do a non-alc beer. I guess it's a 0.5% called Nevertheless. And on Wednesday this week, I was coming back from the city to the Sunshine Coast where we live, and I had an experience that will be familiar to many ferry commuters. I missed the ferry. There was a crash on the Lionsgate Bridge, so I missed the 5:30 ferry, which put me on the 7:50, and that put me into Olive and Anchor in Horseshoe Bay for a little snack and to kill some time. And they had Nevertheless, which I had had before. Although, interestingly, this time the server told me there were two options. There was their standard IPA and then a new fruity hazy one. So I had the fruity hazy one. It was delicious. It was great. When I was drinking beer with alcohol, I found that usually IPAs were a little too much for me. They're a little too hoppy and a little too hazy, fruity, that kind of thing. But on the zero side or the low alc side, I find them to be fantastic because they've actually got some bite and some taste to them. So that's one I've been enjoying lately. My wife and I, we have found a few wine alternatives. I have to say the beer space, in my view, is doing a much better job currently. The variety and the quality of non-alcoholic beers has really improved in recent years. I think wine alternatives are starting to do that, but they're not there yet. They're certainly not as good, at least the ones I've found, not as good as some of the zero-proof beers that are out there. And then, sometimes making stuff ourselves. We've got a few of the, you know, the zero-proof spirits. I don't have any particular favorites in that space. I will tell you one drink that I absolutely loved, and of course I found it in my beloved Las Vegas, and I was in the Wynn property on the Encore side, and they have a great bar there called the East Side Lounge, which I would recommend to anybody in Vegas. Stop in for a drink and see the piano players. In any event, on their cocktail list they had a couple of zero proof options, and one was a spicy margarita. So I ordered it, and it was so good I had a second, which I don't often do with zero proof cocktails. But the key for that one was, and I asked the bartender, and she said the real magic in that one was a homemade habanero simple syrup.
Yeah.
And so it gave it that spice. And just that, I think like zero proof IPAs, this spicy kick stood in the place of the alcohol.
Absolutely.
And made it feel like the drink
activates the senses. So certainly I see that as a trend right now. Habanero, chili flakes, spice ginger often too, to less extent in terms of the activation levels. But yes, I mean, when you take alcohol out of the equation and the properties it brings to a drink, part of the magic is finding what you are going to put in and which makes your mind and your palate think alcohol as opposed to straight, the base ingredient. If that's what you're looking for, not everyone is, but if you're someone who enjoys alcohol and the feelings that it brings to your palate, for example, and the experience of the beverage, habanero is a big thing. Interesting, you talk about finding something in Vegas. We'll get back to Vegas in a minute, but you know, you're a gourmandizer, you're a chef, you go out to a lot of local restaurants, you're a big supporter of our local scene. You know, my impression is that this is still, you know, this market is ascending, and that there aren't as many options maybe that restaurants and bars can use to offer to diners for dinner service. So I don't know. What do you think? What are your observations? Have you seen anyone that's doing something right or interesting? Or do you think it's still, you know, a space where there's room for growth and people are just kind of figuring it out? I mean, there have always been people who don't drink wine, but, you know, wine and food go together. And when you go to a restaurant often, more, you know, a lot of people order a glass of wine to have with their dinner.
Yeah, I think the answer is yes to all of those questions. There are places that are doing it well now, and yes, there's lots of room for improvement. So two that come to mind quickly. One is in West Vancouver, and I just happen to go there quite often because I stay on the North Shore with a friend when I'm in the city for work. And we often go to a place called Raku Japanese Kitchen on Marine Drive in West Van. And really nice, friendly locals sushi spot. And what I love there, and it's not remotely complicated, is the Asahi Zero. And they just, you know, they've got Asahi on draft. They've got, I'm sure they have regular with alcohol Asahi in cans. Or they probably do. And they definitely have the Asahi Zero in cans. And I've found that beers like that, I recall David Chang years ago put out some articles saying that he liked, I forget which beer it was, but it was one of the American sort of macro brews, Miller Lite or something like that. And he was making the case that this is actually really good for food. It can stand in place of champagne, for example, because it'll work with everything.
Right. And the really fresh acidity to the drink. For sure.
Yeah, and I find that with Asahi Zero, I find that with Corona Sol, I think they call their near beer option. And those, I sort of joke and say that they taste very close, as I recall, to the real deal products. And that might be because the real deal products don't have a lot of taste, right? Like these are very clean light lagers, and the non-alc versions work really well. So that
might be a reason why I quite like the Beck Zero. And just to your point about which types of beverages may be having more success right now in that non-alc or low alc space, and I agree with you right now, and I don't think we'd be alone in this. The non-alc beer market has a lot of great product. I think it's in short. Easier to make a really good non-alc beer than right now to make a non-alc wine or a non-alc spirit. It just is. You know, I like Beck Zero, the same thing. I like a nice, clean Bavarian type of lager. And also, I also have had the Heineken, and I quite like that. So I think that space is interesting. And when you talk, like the regionality, also what grows together goes together. So having Asahi with sushi, you know, for example, or Japanese Grill makes sense. And certainly that big beer space, there are the large players who already were beer makers who have made now renditions of non-alc beer, so off of their platforms. But I think another really interesting story, and for another time or for listeners to go and find, there's lots of podcasts out here about this, but Athletic Brewing. So Athletic Brewing, you may have had, is very popular. And that company was established by a gentleman who saw the need for it in the sporting space. And he did it straight off right as a non-alc beer. And it has, growth has been exponential. And, you know, this year it's now one of the sponsors for Arsenal FC in the Premier League. So, you know, that says kind of a lot about what's going on in that space. And we'll get back to London a little bit, but especially for a very strong beer drinking tradition. I'm seeing that in the beer space for sure.
And I have had Athletic, and we've got some in the fridge upstairs, actually. I think it's great. It's and again, the IPA side of their offerings, they've got one called Run Free or Run Wild, something like that. And it's really tasty. The other restaurant option locally that just popped to mind, of course, for me, because I used to work there, is Burdock & Co. And the one thing that sticks in my mind on this point was a tea menu that they had with curated teas. You can pair those to food items, and that just makes sense to me as well. If you're a tea lover, and obviously a restaurant like Burdock would put some thought into the pairings between the teas and the food options.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe before we get to the non-alc wine conundrum, some people might call it that right now, that you've shared with me. I don't have it off the top of my head, but there is a sparkling tea drink, like a sparkling wine, I would say almost, that is very, very popular. We don't see it that much in our market here, but I know it's in Alberta. And a friend of mine who's very deep in the food scene mentioned that she thought it was one of the best non-alc products she's had this year. And it was with service in restaurants, and it was tea-based. So, you know, tea has tannins. So it could be that. And then, you know, there's the aging and so forth. So that's a very interesting comment. And certainly there are a lot of non-alc beverages with tea components. But yeah, you know, I think that it's going to be a little while longer before we start seeing more non-alc wines on the market that I think have broader appeal, to be brutally honest. You know, there are substitutes like proxies, I think we've discussed before, which I think you mentioned to me that you try, and proxies is, you know, it meant to be a proxy, you know, instead of standing in instead of. And from my recollection, that is not a de-alc wine, but it's made with unfermented juice from grapes that you would use to make wine, for example, from memory, like a Pinot Noir. I've had that dark one, and I thought it had the body and the look of a wine.
Yep. And they use some teas in their various of their mixes and vinegars to give acidity. But I think it's you're right. It's definitely not a wine replacement, and I think it's well named. It's a proxy.
It's
so don't
proxy.
Go in expecting wine.
Yeah. You know, I've had a lot of people ask me, especially during dry January or other times where they're really into sitting down having dinner, like, oh, tea, you know, what non-alc wines should we buy instead of, you know, we normally drink this or that and we like our Viognier and we're not going to be doing our Cabernet Sauvignon. What should we buy? And I said, well, it's still kind of tricky right now. You know, there are non-alc wines being made. I'm not talking about the proxies for the moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that the days are early still on the development of the techniques to deliver a product which more closely resembles how you experience the wine, because there are a couple of different ways to make non-alc wine. They start with alcohol in it and you de-alk it either through something like reverse osmosis or, you know, a spinning, for lack of better words. Mm. And so through that process, you know, in very plain terms, one might say that there are layers or some of the components or nuances of the wine product that are stripped out. And so, you know, large players, I think, around the world are heavy into the R&D on this, and more products are coming out in Europe, in the United States. And I don't think it's going to be much longer before there's more on the market, which might address what some people who like wine want to experience. And that's not everyone. I mean, for me, I do miss that right now in some of the ones that I've tried. It's that je ne sais quoi. It's that layer that I enjoy that I can't describe that is not there. But that's not for everyone. And we all like our different things. But that's what I hear and I see, which is a lot of people say, we haven't quite found it yet. I think it's coming.
Okay. And what makes you say that I think it's coming? And I'm hoping that some of these massive transnational companies are dumping billions of dollars into research. Do you see that happening? Because I think it is almost like a chemistry puzzle to be solved.
Yeah, well, I don't have the visibility on the numbers, but that could only be my expectations. And maybe we'll get to this a bit later, or maybe we'll do it now, which is what's happening in the global wine industry and you know, the wine world losing a lot of its tasters and seeing people leaving the wine camp, so to speak, or reducing for different reasons. And I think that wine producers are like, we still want to be relevant. We still want to have an option. We want to offer something for those people who perhaps don't want to have that wine with 11% alcohol or 8% alcohol or 14% alcohol, but we'd still want to, you know, we want to make something that people are going to enjoy. So, you know, that's a very qualitative anecdotal and, you know, comment on my part. If they don't get there, I think it won't be for lack of trying. And,
Okay, well, that's encouraging.
And I'm optimistic, but I don't know. The jury's out. So we can get together in a year or two. I will say, and I should have tried this on my own by now, but I haven't because I've been focusing on other non-alcoholic drinks in the last 6 to 12 months. But I've heard that Geisen from New Zealand, which is a very prominent New Zealand wine, particularly of Sauvignon Blanc, has made a non-alc zero range of Sauvignon Blanc sparkling wine. And I've heard very good things about it. I need to practice what I preach and go out and try it. I used to drink Gaizen, you know, the alcoholic version, and I haven't had it in a while. But I've heard this from many camps. You can buy it online in Canada through different platforms, and I'm sure it'll be in certain bottle shops, non-alcoholic bottle shops. But I do mention the Gaizen, so maybe I'll pick some up, you pick some up, and we can, you know, chat about that anon in another episode and compare our notes.
I'd love that. I'd love that. I'm going to Google it as soon as we're done. See if I can pick up a few bottles.
Okay. So what should we get onto now? Gosh, well, there's, you know, where to buy, what to experience. You know, you've mentioned places where you go. I buy in Whole Foods. There are some great online platforms now in Canada called Sober Market, Upside Drinks. Here in Vancouver, a new business is called Sensorium. Just a couple of years ago, I guess maybe not only a couple of years ago now, but during the COVID era. And that's online. And then there are some great shops if you're in Vancouver. The Modern Bartender has alcoholic and non-alcoholic options for all of your mixology needs. On Commercial Drive, there's mocktails, there's the Drive Canteen. If listeners are living in Kelowna, you'll know Born to Shake, perhaps, in Penticton Barkeep. And for anyone who goes to Seattle ever, I was down there a couple weeks ago, and I mentioned a great little expedition. I went to the one non-alcoholic bottle shop. It's in North Seattle, I think in an area called Finney Ridge. You might be familiar with it. I hadn't spent any time in Finney Ridge. And it's called Cheeky and Dry. And I loved it.
Great name.
So if you ever find yourself in North Seattle or Seattle and you want to go try it, you can wander in the shop. A little bit of trivia on the side is before I went into Cheeky and Drive, I'd been driving all morning and I was really hankering for some lunch and, to be quite honest, a cold beer. I didn't care if it had alcohol or not. I just wanted a beer. And right across from Cheeky and Tavern, I couldn't have planned this. There was a tavern, an old style American tavern called the Snow Goose Tavern. I swear to God, I did not plan this. I saw it. It was like an oasis. I'm like, I'm going to go in the tavern first, and then I'm going to go to Cheeky and Dry. And the tavern is, as you expect, you walk in, there's one large, long wooden bar, wooden booze. Some of the locals had a great cold local ale and chatted with the proprietor. And I said to him, oh, Snow Goose, is there some Canadian connection here? He goes, oh yeah, my grandmother grew up in Sawas and I used to spend my summers up there. So anyway, for anyone who finds themselves in Seattle wanting to do a little bit of beer exploring and non-alc exploring, I highly recommend the Snow Goose Tavern and Cheeky and Dry. So that's just a little travel tip for you for Washington State.
Fantastic.
But so on the kind of in the world of United States, since we're there, and since you are a Vegas geek, you know, when we were chatting about this a little while ago, you mentioned to me that you were surprised that when you go to Las Vegas, other than what you had just mentioned to me about the spicy margarita, you know, there's not a lot on offer for people who aren't drinking alcohol. I don't know. Please explain. Maybe is it because it's Sin City and that's you? It's not you're not sinning, or, you know, what is it? What's going on? You know, it's the Mecca for food and beverage. It's all sorts of people are going to Las Vegas. It's meant to be for everyone. Has it not caught up? Is it too big? What do you think's going on there?
Yeah, it's such an interesting topic, and I don't know is the honest answer, but my experience certainly has been that there are fewer options in Las Vegas than I expected there would be, and fewer options than I've experienced in other places. I think you've hit on a few of the potential reasons. It's Sin City. So there's another big discussion going on in Las Vegas around whether casinos should become non-smoking properties. They're kind of the last holdout, or to my knowledge, they are the last, certainly one of the last holdouts of businesses where you can smoke inside, right? There, Park MGM has recently gone smoke-free. Some casinos will offer a portion of their area smoke-free, but there's a real resistance. And I think the casinos are thinking, you know what? Smokers are gamblers. Gamblers are smokers. We don't want to cut out our market. And maybe there's some similar thinking going on the alcohol side. It just, you know, historically has gone together with gambling and has gone together with Vegas. Against that, from my point of view, it's a business opportunity and Vegas is all about making money. So I'm frankly a little bit surprised that it hasn't taken off more than it has. I think inevitably it will catch up. I'm just, but I think Vegas may have those particularly Vegas reasons for not mm-hmm. wanting to move as quickly as other places. But on that business front, I want to say to people who own these restaurants, and maybe I will, I'm going there next week. You know, if you had a non-alc alternative, if you had a nice red proxy on the menu, I would pay up for it because mm-hmm. I want that experience. And I think it could be, you know, another profit center for them. But certainly my experience comparing Las Vegas to Europe, I was expecting fewer options than we found. And I was surprised there the other way. There were so many more mm-hmm. non-elk options that made the traveling there a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to come back to the Europe discussion in a minute, but just to your point on pricing, that's a fascinating one because people are used to, accustomed to spending a certain price for a drink yes. that has alcohol.
Yes, I love this topic.
And then I've hear, well, why would I spend a lot more, you know, why would I spend that much or close to that for a non-alcoholic drink? And I understand the question. What I'm also seeing is people are spending almost the same or close to it or more than they would for a can of seltzer or soda water or San Pal, which I love. I love the scent, you know, the flavored San Pal. I too will spend more to have that experience that I could swap for a wine. And for me, this comes into the value proposition. Unlike, I guess, any product with balancing, what experience are you getting? What is the story? What's the brand? It has to taste good, right? In order for that to work.
For sure.
But this is, we're getting into the world now of the premium territory. So what is it that is going to encourage me to buy, spend $8 to $9 on a package of a non-alcoholic cocktail or drink, for example? Not a bottle, but, you know, over the $3.50 or the $3 for San Pellegrino, for example. And those are the kind of prices I'm seeing here in broad terms. So it's not going to be for everyone, I don't think, but I think it could be, well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people who don't typically drink alcohol in any event or haven't will say, oh, wow, these can be really interesting drinks. I'll pay more for that experience. But for me, it seems there is a market for people who will pay anything within reason yes. to have a good drink that they will swap in instead yep. of that highball spirit, instead of that glass of wine, instead of your aperitif. You're like, you want the ritual. You want to have that experience, something different. I think there's value there, but it can be a big barrier, you know, aside, I think, from the pocketbooks and many people, we are, you know, people are getting squeezed. I see that. And, you know, our kind of discretionary spend, a lot of people are really looking at that. But I think in terms of the barriers of the product proposition, I think it's out there. I mean, it sounds, maybe I'm just validating what you said, but, you know, what do you hear with your friends or, you know, just kind of pick up around the traps?
Yeah, it's such an interesting topic. So I have two general thoughts, I think. One is, certainly in Canada, we have been conditioned to pay a lot for alcoholic drinks. Mm-hmm. And such a large slice of the consumer cost is taxation. That's a whole other discussion, of course. But what that has done, I think, is condition us to think, okay, a case of beer costs this many dollars, a bottle of decent wine costs this many dollars. And so for me, when I go look for replacements, my eyebrows do raise a little on some of them. And to your point, versus San Pellegrino, versus soda water, versus making myself a cup of tea, that kind of thing. But I have to say, I am more willing to pay close to alcoholic prices for those non-alc versions. And I hope, from a business perspective, I think that's maybe a great opportunity for companies, because you've got kind of a built-in market expectation of a certain level of pricing. And presumably the non-alc providers are not paying so much to the government in the way of taxation. So that is one thought. The other is that I think there is so much value in experience, and I am willing in certain circumstances to choose to pay for that experience. So to take a food analogy, you know, you might have a vegan option on a menu that is as expensive as the beef option. And some people might raise their eyebrows at that and say, well, hold on, the beef cost, is, your food cost on this beef option is going to be way higher. That matters much less to me if the vegan option is created creatively and prepared deliciously and plated mm-hmm. well, because there's so much value to me in that, right? Like, you've got to mm-hmm. pay your kitchen staff to come up with that dish, to execute it well and bring it to me in the restaurant. So for me, I've gotten to this place where what matters to me is the experience more than, you know, I guess what I would call input costs to whoever I'm buying from. Does that resonate with you at all?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that for sure resonates with me. And it will with a certain sector of consumers or a certain time and place. Right, we have a certain time and place where we'll go and get a grab and go food item, and I'm looking for value. And sometimes with our rising prices, I'm like, "What? I just paid $15 for that tuna fish sandwich on that's piece of bread? Crazy. Are you kidding me?"
Yeah.
But you know, I'm downtown and it's in an office building, and the rents are crazy, and the staffing costs, and on and on and on. And so it's a challenging market because, sometimes things all cost the same, and then your experience of that item will wildly differ.
Yes,
so it's an adventure for sure.
Well, and that's super interesting. And again, this is a whole other episode or two, but the value perception in the consumer's mind is influenced by so many things. I heard some report of a study saying that wine tastes better when it comes out of a heavier bottle. People mm-hmm. would tell you that.
Yeah, the psychosomatics.
Right. There is so much going on. But to your point about in certain circumstances being willing to pay. So it sometimes dawns on me when I'm in Las Vegas and I'm ordering a beer, alcoholic or non, and I look at the price and think, ouch, this is $14 or whatever it is, like a steep price for a beer. But then I think, I'm in the middle of the Mojave Desert and mm-hmm. I'm able to sit in this comfortable surrounding and somebody is bringing me a delicious beverage for $14 in the grand scheme of things. That's actually probably not a bad value.
Yeah, especially when, you know, this cost of coffee there is about 14 for black coffee. Taking away walking away from Starbucks, so you know you're running about the same, just a bit more comfort in the chair. You know, it is interesting what you say about, you know, our local market and in the context of alcohol being highly taxed, and that is another episode. And the cost involved in making any beverage, alcoholic or not. And you know, we're in a comparatively small market. I think on the demand side, but in the production side, the products that I've been exploring in the non-alc space, there are a number of Canadian brands that I'm quite liking. Some made here in British Columbia, some from Alberta, lots from Quebec, and further south, Washington and Oregon is doing some really cool stuff. And then Europe, I mean, there's so much. I was in London the last couple of years. There's such huge market power there with the number of consumers, and it's a crossroads for the drinks industry generally, and the variety of products, non-alcoholic and not. It's mind-boggling. It's great to see the consumer has so much choice and perhaps more power. But all that to say is that I think there is a lot of potential in our market for there are a lot of gaps and for future growth. And you know, hopefully that means there'll be more to explore here, but there's certainly a lot out there. And I think I don't think that this, people call it trend or movement, is really going away for the various reasons that we are chatting about this. And it's a point of consideration in the wine industry, as I mentioned, which is, the boomers, the older boomers have been a big buying generation for us. They love wine. They've been collectors, and they're, you know, for lack of word, other words, aging out of wine drinking or reducing, medications or just drinking less or not. And, you know, the Xers, you know, they're still pretty good, but the millennials, they're going on a bit more of an adventure. They're more conscious consumption, smaller volumes, not only of wine, but, you know, hey, craft cocktails are really popular. People have gone to beer, just reducing altogether. And, you know, apparently the Zs, apparently there's not even a lot of interest there right now. And so there's a lot of, I suppose, consideration about who is drinking what and why, and what can we make for the consumers that they're going to enjoy. And then I guess also a corollary to that is, if there's an existential angst about it for people who make wine with alcohol in it, you know, how do we keep it relevant? How do we keep it on the tables? You know, right. Wine's been around for centuries, and it's right. The connector. There's a lot going on at once in this space, driving this trend. And I hate to use the word trend, because I think that's an understatement. I don't think it's a trend, so to speak.
I don't know what the stronger word for trend is, but I agree with you. And so I have a question about the existential threat, but before that, and just while I'm thinking of it, on the Europe front, I think that there was a great example of doing it well. So I can think of two examples. A trip we took 3 years ago, maybe, and we were in Barcelona, and we met this great bartender named Eduardo the Marquis on Instagram. I'll give him a shout out because he's just a fantastic bartender. And my wife asked for a mocktail at the time, and I was curious what the reaction would be from this fellow who was very serious about crafting cocktails. And he did not miss a beat. He said, absolutely, I will make you something delicious, and alcohol can be a consideration in a cocktail, but it absolutely does not need to be. And of course, he spoke English fluently as well as Spanish and Portuguese. And he mixed up a version of a Negroni using products that were by, you know, Martini, the brand that makes vermouth and all sorts of things. And they were zero proof, which are now becoming more common, but that was eye-opening to me at the time. Anyway, shook up this drink. It was fantastic. And so there is,
The Martini Zero, like you see those, that's big on the market right now. There's also an RTD, a ready-to-drink product called Phony Negroni. So if you haven't had an opportunity to try that, you can try Phony Negroni.
I will look it
Phony.
Sounds terrific. And then on the beer side in Europe, we noticed that what I will call the macro brews, we were in Portugal, and Superbock, I think, is their big sort of their Molson Canadian equivalent. And then in Italy, Moretti, they all had these great zero proof beers that were available everywhere. So it just was not an issue at all. It was super easy. But that may be contributing to the existential angst that some are feeling in this industry. And so I guess two questions. One is, are you hearing that buzz, that existential angst buzz? I'm guessing you are. And the form it takes. And then the other question is, why is there angst? And I suspect there are good reasons for it, but I'm really curious as to why is there angst when one answer to it is just, there are just more alternatives. If you like wine, keep drinking it.
Well, there's a lot there, Graham. Okay. I feel like this will be a survey.
For another episode?
Yeah, I think so. I think so with you. And also my colleague, Mark Hicken, who has been on my show a number of times now, and speaking about policy, liquor policy and regulation. And you might recall we did one episode together on the legacy of prohibition. So we in Canada had prohibition as well as in the States. You know, just over 100 years has passed since prohibition, but the era of prohibition has left a very strong imprint, not only on our monopolistic approach here in Canada and our provinces to alcohol and how that affects business. And not only how it affects business of the producers, but also how we, the people, are governed of when and where and how much we can imbibe our alcohol and how much it will cost us. And that is still very strongly felt today. And why I'm mentioning this is because the concerns, and I'll say that very serious concerns in corners of and stakeholders and members of the wine industry, I won't say all, but I'll say it's there, it's a current, I hear it a lot, is about the rise of neo-prohibitionism. This is a thing. I know I'm sounding dramatic. There are people who wish there to be a ban on alcohol from back to being like we're in prohibition from us being able to buy it in our daily lives. I know I'm sounding dramatic. I can at times be dramatic. This is not one of those times.
Okay. Yikes.
Yeah. And there are, you know, and that's a whole other show. And in fact, I think I'll have Mark back on the show to get into that a bit deeper because he's been quite involved in writing a lot of commentary on this point. But for example, things like studies that have come out in the last couple of years by certain thinkers, academics, and scientists in Canada who are suggesting that there be a change to the recommended drinking allowance in Canada. Those, you know, reducing it to a week, I think, to a year, to never. And there is a lot of discussion about no safe amount of alcohol. There is no safe amount, and this is being discussed in bureaus of the WHO who have taken this on board and who are being vocal about whether or not this is a global issue. American stakeholders also. It's getting more political traction. A couple of weeks ago, you may have seen in the news that some American lawmakers basically put the kibosh on certain aspects of a review of the next set of standards and recommendations for American dietary and alcohol guidance because of the conversation about this. And I would say in broad terms, the conversation is there are varying views as to the science and the findings of certain studies, sure, which is basing the statements being made about what is safe, what is not safe, risk, and so forth. And, you know, I am not in any means demeaning or saying that there is no risk. I'm not making any kind of qualitative comment here. I think ultimately everyone will need to make their own choices, will know their risks for themselves in addition to other things. But, you know, right now, the lot of the conversation is about the fact that there are different studies saying different things. And so if one is in the wine industry and it's your life and you think that in moderation, wine can be a good part of life and isn't any more risky, for example, than getting in your car, or getting on a bus or getting in a plane, for example, then, you know, this rise of neo-prohibition is a concern. So that's there could be a couple hours on this, but I would say right now, if you just read anything about what's going on in the global liquor, and I'm not just talking about wine now, the alcohol industry, there is a lot of discussion about this. So stay tuned. So yes,
yeah,
that's a big one. That's a big one.
It's huge. And honestly, yeah, that was not the answer I was expecting. So that is really, really interesting and quite chilling. Mm-hmm. Again, not to be overly dramatic, but so much of this discussion is so fun and happy and bright and liberating, which is to say that here are some great options for zero proof or lower alcohol drinks for you if you want them. And there's more research being done and there's probably more great ones on the way if you want them and when you want them. But goodness knows, even though I'm on a completely dry kick right now, I do not want the world of wine to go away.
Well, and this is it. And so I suppose I was not intending to understate what you're talking about, the optionality and the increased products, because that is happening. Mm-hmm. I just look at some local producers that I know in British Columbia, producers in wine, and lower alcohol, you know, things like Piquettes, which are, you know, 3 or 4% alcohol. So much lower alcohol. People see that that's what consumers want. That's what we want. Or even like you say, there's lots of 0% options on beers. So, I'm not saying that producers of alcohol, wine or otherwise are saying, oh, you know, we're not supportive of that.
No, that's not the case.
Because I think often for people who are not in the industry, it might not be something that you're seeing on the news. You won't be part of the everyday conversation about these real concerns. And for me, and I think probably for anyone that you'd speak to in the wine industry, this is about choice, to your point. This is about having an option to be able to make your product and your artisanal craft and offer it to others who wish to imbibe it. Ooh, and so this does smack of neo-prohibitionism. There are camps who are definitely, there's a temperance movement. And there are also people who are in various groups who are sharing information about studies that they have, which will show the risks. And I think it's important for everyone to understand, and that would be for anything. For me personally, it's like, well, if you eat a lot of sugar, you know, there's lots out there about how bad sugar is for you. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots about our well-being. And so I think, you know, a silver lining of this is that perhaps more and more people are having the conversation about what does it mean to have a balanced lifestyle in your context and your options. And so for me, I always like to say I'm a small L libertarian, which is, I just want options and to choose for myself, but to be a knowing participant in that choice and to be, you know, expecting that the science and the studies put before me, that I have a wholesome view of them. You know, I'm not the expert in the scientific studies, and then I can make that choice in addition to whatever my, you know, personal circumstances are. So I think this, the idea of moderation and that wine can still be okay in your life, you know, is something that some people want to continue to cheer for.
Seconded.
You know,
I will continue to cheer for that as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I guess just kind of going back from altitude about to the wine industry, and one of my recent podcast episodes was with Billy Davies, who's in Napa Valley and part of a family that's been there, very kind of iconic family, Schramsberg Vineyards. He started his own low intervention, natural winemaking project. You use making wines from 40, 50, 100-year-old vines. And we talked about, you know, when you're in Napa Valley, you know, and you have trends globally with the reduction of consumption of alcohol, sales are down everywhere. Our stores, consumption amongst the younger generation, you know, you have decades and centuries of people whose lives have been in grape farming to make wine, and it's their passion about. So, you know, how do we keep wine on the table and relevant for people, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think the moderation and the optionality, but also the story that it's a craft and it's a passion and it's an agricultural product. I think people don't often talk about it that way. And it's a living thing. You know, wine is a living thing. It changes, it grows, it rests, it sleeps, it wakes up. You have it.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what? It you're right absolutely about the stories and the importance of that. And I think your podcast focusing on wine, my podcast focusing on food, but both of our podcasts, at the end of the day, they are about stories and human interaction. And I would hate to see a big piece of that, which over the centuries has been wine, wither away. So let's.
So having said that, so I think you're right. So it's stories and it's connection. And I might just say, so there's no, you know, misunderstanding. I think that no matter what is in your glass, one chooses to clink the glass. It's the ritual. It's about the ritual. It's about coming together. It's taking a time out from your day, getting off your devices, getting into real time in the analog with someone and clinking your glasses, whether no matter what is in that glass. And I might just say, because of the gaps that we're seeing, and we can stay tuned in future episodes, that right now I myself am working on my own small project for a non-alcoholic cocktail because I want to create something that I want that works for me and I'm not finding in the market. So maybe right. On a future sidebar chat, we can clink glasses with this concoction.
I would absolutely love that. I am excited to hear that story, and
stay
excited
tuned.
To see where that goes.
So I think we'll wrap it for today. Thank you so much for joining me back to do this sidebar chat. I think you're heading off on travels again soon, so no doubt you mentioned Vegas, you're going back, so we'll have to get together soon and maybe talk about some of your impressions. I look forward to hearing about any conversations you have with some of your friends and colleagues down there about non-alcoholic journeys and you know, what might be in store there. So thank you so much and safe journeys and have fun at home with the family.
Thank you, Tanya. This has been great. It is always so much fun to talk. Talk to you again soon.
Bye. Hey, thanks for tuning into my sidebar chat with Graham McLennan today. I hope that you enjoyed our discussion. If you'd like to learn more or keep up with things going on in the foodie world, look for Chefdemoni, Graham's podcast series. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast series. You can also find Graham on LinkedIn, in the Instagram world at Chefdemoni, and on his website, www.chefdemoni.com. As you know, ratings and comments on platforms like Apple Podcasts and Spotify help people like me spread the word in our listening group. So if you're up to helping me out with that, I'd love it. Also, please share my series with friends and family who you think would be interested. But most importantly, keep exploring and tasting whatever that is in your glass, wine or not. I look forward to seeing you back here again soon on the TT Wine Explorer podcast. Take care.